Did I ever tell you that I joined a cult before?
I think you may have vaguely said something about it. I don't remember anything about white sheets or Kool-Aid, though.
There was white involved, but there was no Kool-Aid.
Okay. What? When you say white, what are we talking about here?
Well, it was a bunch of white people, but.
All right. So, wait, what kind of cult are we talking about here? Because this sounds like something totally different.
It was the best cult ever, and I had so much fun. And today we get to interview my cult leader.
Oh, okay. All right. Cult lead. Wait a second.
All right, so welcome to the Possibilitarian Podcast. We are the hosts, Anna, and this is
Rob.
and so we have on the show today a cult leader, Braxton.
For real.
Dude, I'm not drinking your fruit punch, man.
No, I guarantee you by the end of this show, he's gonna be drinking the Kool-Aid.
I
That's
don't
how good
think.
he's gonna be.
Challenge accepted.
So you wrote a book. Tell us about this book.
Yeah, so I am a cult leader, and I didn't hear my name get mentioned. My name is Braxton Amundson, and I wrote a book, and it's called "Let's Start a Cult: The Power of Radical Belief." And the whole point of why I wrote this book is I've gone through a lot of different things. So the idea that I was a cult leader came when I was 22 years old. And I started my own business. And I actually was thinking about this the other day, and I don't think I even stress it enough in the book. It's really, really crazy. I had a pastor come over to my house 2 days ago. And he's like, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you about your book." And I was like, okay. He's totally gonna be like, "I'm a Christian pastor and I'm talking about, I just read this cult book and I'm gonna go make this guy wrong for writing this book." So I was prepared for
Like
that,
all the Jehovah Witnesses.
Oh.
and it was actually not where it went at all. What he ultimately wanted is, he's like, "Hey, how can I take these principles that you talk about in your book and apply them to my church? How can I get the people in my church practicing, the steps to enrollment in order to grow our church?" And I was like, "Wow, I'm happy to have this conversation. It's a lot more, it's a lot different than what I was prepared for." But I was 22 years old and I started my own business, and I had all these people traveling around the country, going to colleges in random places and buying back unwanted textbooks. And by the time I was 25 years old, I think I was 22 years old, I made 200 some thousand dollars, and which was more money than I knew what to do with back then.
I
And
believe
I
it.
grew my business. And by the time I was 24, I had 39 people that were traveling around the country, going to random places and buying back textbooks from professors, just doing this really odd thing. And I never understood why people followed me. Like, I was like, "Yeah, it's a cool job, you make good money," but I realized that those people weren't in the business because they wanted to do what I was doing. They were in the business because they wanted to surround themselves with my energy. So I didn't understand, like, how I was growing my platform, how I was growing my cult, if you will, until I ended up taking MITT and I understood why people choose leaders. And it had nothing to do with the act of going out and doing what we were doing. And it had everything to do with the mission behind what we were doing. I'm like, "We're creating freedom. We're, like doing," like, I had talked up this job that was like basically taking trash away from people. Like literally, like, I go up to professors and I'm like, "Hey, do you have any garbage that you don't use? Cool, I'll take it." Like, that's effectively what we do. And but I talked up this garbage, like, glorified garbage man job as if it was the greatest thing that's ever existed, which is where, like, the cult thing comes from, because I talk up really, like I see the best in everything, such that I can turn, like, people say, like, I can sell salt to a slug, and I'm like, I could,
Because you're a
because I talk about
hustler, hey.
that if you could possibly die, like, you, I know that your life as a slug is kind of meaningless. How cool would it
Thanks.
be if you could, like, die the most glorified? Like, I can do it.
It's like the the best slug ever. So not only will you be a slug, you're going to be the best slug ever. Yeah.
That's spectacular.
The whole cult thing came from. So then we ended up, I ended up doing MITT, Master in Transformational Training, where I met Anna, and I was, you know, recruiting a bunch of the people from my business and or from other parts of my life, my mom, my dad, family, and occasionally someone would say, it sounds like you joined a cult. And I understood, I'm not going to make anyone wrong for what they say. So, hey, Braxton, it sounds like you joined a cult. And I go, yeah, I did. It's great. Would you like to join? Hey, Braxton, it sounds to me like you're brainwashed. And I say, I am. I've been washing my clothes and my face for 29 years, and I just started washing my brain, and I've never been thinking so clearly before in my life. Or, hey, Braxton, it sounds like you're in a pyramid scheme. And I said, I am. Can you help me get to the top? So, like, whatever you throw at me, I'm just going to accept it. Like, I'm not gonna make you wrong. I'm just going to be on your side. Hey, you're brainwashed. No, I am. You're right. And, like, when I keep making people right about what they're saying, they have nothing left to say.
That's right. Some good real-time resiliency right there, though. The fact that you're able to, like, just take it and flip it and actually make it positive when they're trying to, like, cut you down in the process of it, that's good stuff.
Yeah, not a lot of people can do that, though. Yeah. You have some people that will share their dreams with their friends and their family, and their friends and family will be, like, the ones to be like, oh, that's stupid, or that's, like, why would you want to do that? And then it just... how they feel, it's just they don't even want to pursue their dreams anymore because they care too much about, you know, what the opinion of their friends and family are. So the fact that you can do that and you can just flip it and just be like, yeah, of course, yeah, I'm in a cult. That's great.
The attitude started when I was when I first started my business. So I went to college for industrial engineering. So I went to Penn State University for industrial engineering, and which is a pretty solid major that people go to school for. They get really nice jobs at a college. And all of my friends signed up to work for Ingersoll Rand and their engineering department and, like, all of these, like, you know, really prestigious companies. And I started basically traveling out around the world collecting trash and selling it on the internet. So I was making, like I said, I was making like $200,000+ a year. So I was making good money, but it wasn't a prestigious position. So I heard all the time, hey, Braxton, when are you going to get a job? Like, you know, like what you went to school for? When are you going to get a real job? When are you going to grow up? And so, like, that almost, that in itself almost stopped me. That almost stopped me from really pursuing something that I, you know, that I created something amazing from. And because I was tired of, like, I was almost, like, embarrassed. Like, when I'm hanging out with friends and, like, I'm like, invited to a party. Hey, what do you do? Oh, I'm in medical school. Hey, what do you do? I'm an engineer at this company. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And then the what do you do conversation was something that I did everything that I possibly could to avoid because I did not want to answer that question. Like, that's the challenge of entrepreneurs. And what I learned right now is when people ask me what I do, years ago, I used to say I buy and sell college textbooks, which isn't even, there's nothing wrong with it, right? It's not like I'm making the world worse. It's not like I'm selling, like, cancer insurance to poor people. Like, or, you know, I could totally be right here. It's actually how I first got popular on the internet. Is I created, oh my God, this is so funny.
Internet popularity. Let's go. Come on. Let's hear it.
Let's talk about your internet popularity.
Yeah. Bring it.
Yeah. This is where we're going to go. And this is perfect for this show. So when I was like 25, basically I just got so cocky from like answering questions this way. Like I kind of like people compared me before Donald Trump was even a presidential candidate. People compared me to Donald Trump because he just has that like, you know, that attitude about him, right? So I had this like attitude about me and I created this Facebook page, and Peter Varberg was actually a member of the Facebook page.
Peter.
So it was like several other people that staffed Basic in advance. Like, I don't know if you remember Whitney Armstrong or Elisa Serrato.
Uh-huh.
They were all in this page.
Oh my gosh.
I was marketing it as, I marketed this page as if I was like some type of business consultant. So you come to me on this Facebook Live, on this page, and you tell me what your profession is, and I will consult you. So that's how I was marketing this thing. And basically what I would do is someone would come on, and they'd tell me what they're doing, and I would tell them why everything they're doing is wrong, and they're harming the world.
Oh, like, my God!
Sell me this pen.
I ended up having like 3,000 or 4,000 followers on this page, and there a lot of them were very, very engaged.
Yeah.
Like, it was hilarious. And I ended up going to Tony Robbins 2 years ago. And this guy comes up to me. His name is Michael Yandre. And he taps me on the shoulder. He's like, I know you. And I'm like, oh, have you done MITT? Because like that's like pretty much where like you know you comes from. He's like, no, what's that? I'm like, oh, it's this program that like a lot of people here know me from. He's like, no, I've never done it. He's like, I was on your page years ago, and he was like the third or fourth person to be consulted by my business.
Awkward.
I quit my job. He's like, and I'm so thankful for you. And I was like, whoa. He quit his job because he was on my business consulting page. And I consulted him out of it. He's like, dude, you exposed so many like blind spots that I had because I was in this. And the issue with it, though, is it had me just looking at the negatives of life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I created this, like, attitude that, like, you know, like, I don't give a fuck and all this stuff, which I ended up shifting it. So, like, in this book, I shifted this mindset. Hey, how can I use this attitude that I created where, like, I'm not brought down by other people, but how can I use it to build other people up and not tear things down? Mm-hmm. So, like, that was kind of my transformation going from, like, this, like, slightly well-known internet person to, like, okay, I'm now doing good in the world.
Yeah.
It's a good transition.
Most definitely.
It's fine.
Although I will say, I'm actually kind of a fan of the comedic value behind your previous choice on tearing people down like that. Because, I mean, it's entertaining. Dark humor, it's still funny. People appreciate dark humor. But the fact that, you know, some of these people, you actually got them to, like, reconsider their professions and get a better job to better themselves. I mean, at least that's kind of, you know.
Well, I mean, like, my mom, she used, she would think it's funny. But for me, it was kind of not funny. It was, like, the most devastating thing in the world to be told that I suck at singing. I wanted to be a singer, and my mom was like, oh my God, that's awful. Like, don't do it. So, yeah, I'm not a singer. And I sound like shit. So the fact that, like,
you people are lying through your teeth right now.
The fact that, like, okay, some people really have this very unreal, some people do have this very, very unrealistic thought process where they're like, oh, I want to be, let's just, for example, I want to go to the moon or whatever, but they're like 50 and you're just like, how are you going to do that? You know? And it's like, you don't want to shoot down their dreams, but at the same time, like, you know, you have to be like the bad guy and you have to be like the one to be like, all right, bruh, like you're not even physically fit for you to even go to the moon right now. So
that's actually a really good example. And this is an example that I used when I was going through captaining 167. So all these people are, you know, I all the seniors are telling me about all these people, and I'm reading through all these LOAs, and I was like, guys, we need to tell him. We need to tell Tom that he's not going to be president.
Oh my God! So let's talk about Tom.
Yeah, I'm so out of the loop with this right now. Can I please get included in so I can laugh too?
So tell him about Tom.
Yeah, there's this guy that took this training with us, and he's probably 72 years old. And
it's a young age.
And he made a declaration
of independence.
He made the declaration of independence.
His wife was like going to like lobbyist events, and he was like taking money from people so that he could campaign around the world. And I entertained it for a while. I totally did. I thought it was hilarious. And right before one of our weekends, so in the LP program, we had three training weekends. And right before our second training weekend, I told the seniors, I'm like, guys, we got to end this. I was like, the fact that I haven't interrupted this man means that I've stolen money. Like, every single person that donated money to his campaign, I'm responsible for stealing from. So I said, we're going to put him on a stretch. And I don't remember who his senior was. I said, we're going to put him on a stretch. And the stretch is he gets to call every single person on the team, including myself, and ask them if we will be voting for him in the next presidential election.
No! He definitely didn't call me.
No. He called like five people and got like, I'm like, he's either going to hear like the truth or people are going to lie to him.
Yeah.
And either way, it's going to be super valuable. And I'm like, none of us will be lying to him. We're all going to tell him the truth. And I was like his third or fourth call. And he's like, hey, Braxton, I'm on the stretch. Will you be calling to vote for me in the next presidential election? And if the answer is no, you get to tell him why. So like, it's either going to be yes or no and why. And I said, honestly, no, you have not established any credibility for me. You have not, you know, shown your leadership skills. And I gave him like a really detailed answer for why I wouldn't be voting.
Yeah.
And then like 2 or 3 days later, he told everyone that he was no longer running for president.
Hey,
but that's the truth that needs
I
to
like
be
him.
Told.
I like him.
People yeah.
need to hear that feedback. Because like I said, the fact that I didn't interrupt it sooner, every person that donated money to his campaign, I'm effectively responsible for them wasting their money.
And I think that actually comes, it ties into how much you truly love someone and how much you truly care about someone. Because you could allow someone to continue with their very unrealistic dreams.
Yeah.
And be like, yeah, I fully support you. And then secretly, like, you don't, like, you know. But if you're honest with someone and you tell them, like, hey, this is probably not going to work out for you, and this is why, then it gives that person, you know, that clarity and not just, oh, it's because they're hating on me or, you know, whatever, or it's because they don't want to support me. And it's like, nah, dude, it's because it's seriously, it's not going to happen. And it's the hardest conversation that you can have with someone, but it truly shows how much they care. Because if you didn't care, then you would allow them to continue being mediocre.
Right.
And it's like what I always say, like, the whole thing is, are you willing to let go of being liked in order to be loved? Like the person that, you know, that just is like, oh yeah, good job, Anna, pat on the back.
Here's
like,
a gold star.
Here's
a gold
person,
star.
But you don't love that person.
Yeah.
The person that's like, good job, Braxton, keep it up. Like, you know, like, I like those people around. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to, like, push them out of my life. But, like, I genuinely love the person that interrupts my mediocrity to call forth my greatness.
Yeah. And you're going to this is, like, a known thing, is, like, you're going to surround yourself with people. If you want to remain mediocre, you're going to surround yourself with people who are going to give you those gold stars, who are going to continue to be, like, oh, yeah, that's great. So, like, if I'm, like, in a relationship with somebody and my friend sees that the guy is, like, shitty, but
where
she
are we going
wants...
with this?
We're not talking about you right now. So, so, you know, obviously, you know, they're going to be like, oh, this person's like, oh, yeah, that person's great. Whatever makes you happy. But then they see, like, how shitty that person is. Instead of being like, hey, dude, like, there's so many red flags, instead of, you know, saying something, they'll continue to allow me to be in this, like, horrible relationship. And then when we break up, they're like, oh, yeah, I hated that guy the whole time.
I could have,
like,
told you that.
Be like, you tell me sooner.
Exactly!
Why didn't you tell me sooner? Like, you wasted 3 years of my life by not telling me.
It's, you know what? You know what? And you're a bad friend. You know what? That's your fault. I could have been out of this a long time ago, but you chose to let me do it.
Like, not only am I breaking up with that person, I'm breaking up with you.
To the death.
How dare you?
Right. How dare you?
How dare you?
Yeah, I think about that. And, like, sometimes, like, it is the hard truth. But the hard truth is really what really needs to be said. I've more or less found some sick sense of joy in giving that the hard truth. Like, I definitely was like, guys, when we're telling Tom that he's, you know, when we're giving him this stretch, like, it's going to be great. Or there was also a guy in our advanced, like, when we took the advanced course, he was, like, just holding every single person hostage.
Oh my gosh.
I do take so much joy in this. I'm like, hey dude, are you open for feedback? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, everybody. There's like 120 plus people there. I'm like, all right, everybody, stand up if you trust this guy. And out of the 120 people, one person stood up. And he turns and he looks at that girl, and he's like, thank you. And I'm like, no, don't thank her. She sold out on you. Thank every single person sitting there.
Yes. Yes, and every time.
Like, because she totally lied to him. Like, yeah. She wanted to be liked, so she stood up where everyone else, you know, chose to tell the truth.
Dude, where do you live right now?
I live in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania. Okay, so one of these days, we're going to find some way, shape, or form. I'm going to buy you a beer. Matter of fact, I'm going to buy you a beer and a shot.
Yes!
You are definitely my kind of dude, and that's, I like that shit.
Dude, I appreciate, I will accept. I will 100% accept. I love people that have the courage to surround themselves with people that tell the truth. Like, I have a friend on the phone, I'm on the phone with him. Yeah, clearly him. I'm on the phone with him, and I was like, all right, man, I'm going to let you go. I'll talk to you later. And he's like, you're not letting me go. I want to keep talking to you. And I'm like, he's like, you're not letting me go. You just don't want to talk to me anymore. I'm like, yeah, I don't. And so, like, now when this guy calls me, when we're getting to the end of the conversation, one of us says to the other person, I don't want to talk to you anymore, and we hang up the phone. It's like, because you always say, like, all right, guys, I'm going to let you go. And he's like, I want to keep talking. Like, you just don't want to talk to me anymore. That's okay. Hang up the phone.
Bro, like, I got stuff to do. I got to go.
I got places to be, bitches to see. Not you. You got Lupita. Is it Lupita? What's her name?
Yeah, man, it's tough. I'm in Pennsylvania. She's in California. So we've been separated by 3,000 miles.
Damn.
For like the past 3 weeks.
You know what would be the most cutest, most outlandish gesture?
What would that be?
This is what's going to win you points. I would risk my life with Corona to come see you. And then just drive. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I've actually talked about that too. And the challenge is she works with the elderly, so she's a hospice
nurse.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, yeah. So if I were risking, quote unquote, risking my life, I could potentially bring her Corona and, you know, getting all this things. So like, I'm literally just in a standstill. So I'm literally just balled up in this house all day. It's great.
That's awful.
I live on 100 acres of land, though, so I go on, like, four-wheel, and I go on, like...
You live in the 100-acre wood?
Yeah, I do. I live in a really nice house in 100 acres, so it's not...
I know, you definitely have that, the wallpaper back there. That definitely got a good old, what's the dude that from back in the day that told all the horror stories? The birds and all those? Alfred Hitchcock. No, Alfred Hitchcock. That's got a very... Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Tales from the Crypt.
No, not that. No. But look at that wallpaper, though.
It's amazing. I love it. Because I like roses. But kudos to her, though, for working at a hospice. I volunteered for at a hospice. And what we would do is we would go to, like, veterans' homes, and we would pin them, and we would sit with them for a while, and... you know, give them like the certificate and thank them for their service. And every time I would go, it just got harder and harder for me to sit there because they literally had no one. And it was like, not to like darken the mood, but it was pretty hard to like sit there and, you know, serve your country for so many years.
Yeah.
And then to just die alone. And that was so hard for me. So kudos to her.
And
well, that's actually the craziest part. My mom works at a. I'm sorry if I cut you off.
No, you're good.
But my mom works at a nursing home. She's the activity director, and they don't allow visitors. So it's really heartbreaking. If you drive by the nursing home during the day, their spouses will be right outside of their window, holding up signs to them and say like, "I love you." Because they're not allowed to go in and see their spouse. So it really is like a true love story to go down and see people that are that committed. But the craziest part is, like, a lot of the people in the nursing home have dementia. So instead of them receiving it as an act of love, they're getting mad at their spouse for not coming in.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand why they can't have visitors.
That's rough.
That
I can only imagine the emotional, like, impact that has because of that fact right there. Oh, that's rough. That's definitely rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, crazy, unprecedented times, which is, like, I have no idea what's about to happen. Like, I mean, if you would have told me 10 years ago that Donald Trump was our president.
The Simpsons predicted it, though, so.
So it had to be true.
Nothing will surprise
me. Yeah.
Like, if this is Armageddon, then, like, I'm not surprised, because, like, the fact that Donald Trump is our president is like, okay, nothing surprises me anymore.
Yeah. So, speaking of dementia, like, the one thing that I've always been afraid of is to live my entire life and then suddenly not remember it. So,
don't worry. I'll write a book and I'll read it to you every night.
Shut up! Oh my god! Every time he tries to, like, yeah! He's so corny. He like, always has to put something in there to where it's just like, shut up! You damn, ugh.
You know what? I make you laugh and you know it, and that's why you're a little, I'm not going to say upset right now, but you just can't stand it, because I'm sitting here, and at will, I can make you laugh and smile.
I am trying to be a professional.
And he's sitting here looking at us right now, and he's like, yup, it's true. See? Look at him. He's on my side.
Dude, The Notebook was my go-to, like, seduction movie. In high school, if I was trying to get with a girl, we would just watch The Notebook and by the
end. Oh my god! Movie, like, are you gonna come over and watch The Notebook with me? Round in second,
because, like, we talk about things and we come up and things just come out, and whoever's listening is like, oh, they just said that. Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Goddamn, did.
That's what I like. It's like, oh my god, did you just say that? Like, I mean, I'm sure there was times where, like, 95% of, like, what I was doing when I was captaining LP was complete ad lib.
It looked like you knew what you were doing, though, and that's what you gotta do. You gotta fake it till you make it. That's it.
Fake it till you make it.
I was ad libbing everything, and that's what I was
wrong with that.
I drove her crazy because I was ad libbing it all.
You know, when I realized that you were full of shit, well, not really full of shit, because I think you're awesome, but it was the graduation night where I was like, what? Get out of here. I was like, this whole time I thought this man was a saint. I was like, what? Best ever. I was like, yeah, let's party.
Dude, that's like my thing, though. My thing, though, is, like, how can I continue to, like, live the life that I talk about without compromising, you know, like, my fun and my joy? Like, like I said at the beginning of this, when we first started talking, like, the issue that I've had with, like, a lot of people in, like, the transformational world is, it's like, oh, we're gonna just talk about being a good person, but I'm like, yeah, but I want to party too.
Yeah, right. Like, you could be a good person and still do stuff like this and still kind of, like, laugh at things. Like, I use humor a lot. Like, I don't know if you see a lot of my memes, but, like, I wasn't your meme captain for no reason. Like, I post a lot of, like, really shitty dark humor memes, and it's funny to me, but I'm, like, this huge, like, you know, all about transformational, you know, stuff and emotional intelligence. But at the same time, it's like, why am I restricted to just being, like, all the whole time? And it's just like, you can laugh about things and have fun with things and still want to change the world and make the world a better place.
Right.
I think it's also, like, understanding there's a place and time for everything.
Yeah.
Like there's a place and time. So it's like, I want
to,
you know, it's just,
I'm
like,
still trying to figure that out.
Like, I want to smoke weed at Ropes, but, like, I'm not going to. Because this is not the place for it. Like, do I want to be doing that? Of course I want to be doing that.
Stand up if you smoked weed. And, like, literally the entire...
It's okay.
I can't. I can't.
Is there a...
So what happened was, like, we're supposed to... Okay, we're not supposed to be drinking alcohol or, you know, use, like, recreational drugs while we're doing our training events.
Uh-huh.
And, like, half of our class... I can't even right now. Half of our class smoked weed the night before. And it was, like, the next morning, it was the most awkward thing because there I was. Like, I was passed out. And then so I wake up to this whole clearing conversation of how all these people smoked weed. And I was like, where the fuck was I last night to where I wasn't even invited?
When the fuck did we get ice cream?
When the fuck did we get ice cream? Did you get ice cream? I didn't get ice cream.
Was I sleeping or something?
I'm like a don't ask, don't tell person. Like, I'm like, like if anything's happening, I'm like, guys, just don't tell me. Like even with the seniors, I'm like, just don't tell me. Like I just don't want to know. Like, if you tell me, I have to do something about it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but if you don't tell me, then I won't know. And
I see your logic there. That makes perfect sense to me.
I walk in and I smell weed and I'm like, I'm just going to just keep walking.
Be like, what is that? Is that potpourri?
And I come in and I
smell like outdoor.
So I'm already half asleep. Like, I was aware that someone was smoking weed, but I'm like, it could be anyone. It could be the reps.
It could be a skunk. Who knows?
It could have been an abuela burning sage in the hallway to fend off evil spirits.
I'm like, don't ask, don't tell, right?
Yeah.
So I'm laying in bed, I'm half asleep, and Deanna comes up to me and she's like, Braxton, there are some people that are smoking weed downstairs.
Not
like,
Deanna.
No, they're probably not.
No.
She's like, I'm like, okay.
Good to see I'm asleep, woman.
And then I was trying to go back to sleep, and she's like, you should seriously, like, do something about it. I'm like, fine. So, like, I got on. Were you? So you didn't experience?
No, I was. Apparently, people were partying till like the wee hours of the morning, and I had actually traveled that day. So
partying till the wee hours of the morning, you know.
I was on a flight that morning, and then so of course I had been traveling all day. By the time we were like in bed, I was racked out. I didn't hear shit. So yeah, no, I didn't get to experience any of that.
I was like, okay, I'll get dressed. And I got out of bed, I got dressed, and I went down. And I was like, I'm not going to make anyone mad or upset. I'm not going to be mad or upset. I'm just genuinely curious, like, what this is about. Like, this is a pretty blatant disregard for an agreement that we were all aware of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like one of the ground rules is, like, no side talking. It's not like you're side talking in a meeting. Like, this is a pretty... disregard for a ground rule. So I'm like, I'm just gonna go down there, and I felt like a disappointed dad.
I'm gonna turn this car around right now.
the funniest part is, like,
this is gonna hurt me a lot more than it's gonna hurt you.
What was that?
I'm 10 years younger than everyone else too. So I come in as this disappointed dad, even though I'm like 10 years younger, and I'm like, I'm not even upset. I really just want to know why.
No! No, you did it! Oh my god!
I just want to know why. Like, what was this self-sabotage about? Because, like...
What are you trying to be right about right now?
I'm just so, like... I just want to know. And, like, I sat down there, and they were just all so open. Like, they were all so... genuine, and like they're like this
because they were high.
Because they were high, it was awesome.
It was like watching the scenes of Cocoon right in front of your eyes.
They thought I was gonna kick them all off the team, and I actually thought about it, but then I called Roger, and Roger's like, no, there's no rule that says if you break this ground rule, because there's only one ground rule that you get kicked off the team, and that's the rule 12 one about, like, you know, having, you know, relations with someone else on the team. Like, hey, while this goes on, you're not to have an established relationship unless it already exists. Like, that's the only one that says if you break this ground rule, you're off the team.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no rule there. They didn't agree to it. Roger's like, you can't just kick them all off the team. First off, you won't have a team.
Your entire fucking class is going to be kicked off.
Now you're going to have to forfeit the rest of the season.
Oh, my God. was so funny.
Oh, man.
Meanwhile, like, I'm sitting there, like, every breakdown, I'm sitting there just cracking up about, and I'm just like, I just gotta have this captain face on.
I like how you're just so full of shit the whole time, and then, like, to, like, discover it later on and be like, damn it. Like, you mean I could have been me the whole time?
What that means is he actually did a really good job at playing the role.
He did.
Props to you,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, seriously. See, for, like, keeping it together. Being the best cult leader ever.
Yes. Let's start a cult.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, I got that, like, I love, I mean, even, like, the title of that. Like, I love, like, the title of my book just tells you so much about me. You know, it's just, it's edgy, but it's also funny where it's like, I can't tell if he's serious or if he's joking.
Yeah.
Because that's like my whole thing. Like, have you guys ever seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah, there's
the
lot.
The only one that matters, the first one.
Yes, the first one.
I would high five the shit out of you right now.
Yeah. So yes. There's a part where Jack Sparrow goes on to the first boat, like at the very beginning of the movie, and the two guards are like, "Hey, you're not supposed to be on there." They're like, "What's your purpose here in Fort Royal?" And no lies, he's like, "I confess, it's my intention to commandeer one of these ships, raid, plunder, and pillage the seven seas for all of eternity." And they're like, "He said no lies. I think he's telling the truth." Well, if he was telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Yes.
Like, unless, of course, they knew you wouldn't believe the truth. Even if he told it to you.
And he just walks on by. They're still going back and forth with this argument. Yes. That's yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm a huge, huge movie buff. There's a very large portion of my brain that is biologically programmed for nothing
whole right
but...
brain.
Why is it got to be the whole right brain?
I don't know. That's what I figured.
Movie quotes, references. That's, yeah.
That's the guy's brain. It's like divided up into four sections.
So the whole idea of like, let's start a cult is like, hey, come join my cult. And it's like I had a friend that came and did basic, and after the first night, she was like, "I thought you were joking when you said it was a cult." And I was like, "No." But that title is like it just says so much about me, because like, mm-hmm. that's like who I am. I'm like I'll hide in plain sight, because I'll say something that's so outrageous, even though it's the truth, no one believes it, because I can't believe he would actually say that right now if it
yeah.
was true.
It's like, how dare him say the truth, you know? And not a lot of people speak their truth. And yep. We were actually just talking about that on our last episode, where it's like, speaking your truth is super important.
Yes.
And standing in that truth and not allowing, you know, other people to...
sway you one way or the
yeah.
other.
So,
I'll tell you, one of the most powerful speaking my truth moments in my life was with my mom. Mm. And it was like, shit got real, and it was like, again, one of those things where it's like, am I willing to let go of being liked in order to be loved moments? Where it was actually, my mom was in our basic. Were you in our basic or just our advanced?
I was just in the advanced, and then I went on to Legacy, yeah.
You were in a different basic?
Yeah, I was in 164.
Okay, so I was my mom's group leader in basic.
That must have been fun.
Like, I wasn't like actually her assigned group leader because I was captain, but like... Chris Lee let me go and have lunch with that group, and I facilitated the group while I was there. So my mom is getting coaching from me, and I did not treat my mom any differently. Like when I was in basic, and we're actually telling this story the other day, but like, what was your favorite part of being captain? And I said, you know, I got to confront all the people that were late, and you know, I had them clear their broken agreements and let them in the training. And at one time, someone comes in and says, "Hey, there's two people that are out here that are late, and they're ready to come in." So I walk outside, and I look at the two. They're two, like, older women, like, in their early 60s. And I'm like, "Vicky, Bertha, do you acknowledge that you're late?" And Vicky's like, "Yeah." Bertha's like, "Well, my Uber driver dropped me off." And I'm like, "No, I'm not interested in the story behind it. Do you acknowledge you're late?" "Well, I live in Riverside." "No, I'm not interested in that. Do you acknowledge that you're late?" And, like, after a little bit, she's like, yeah, I do. I'm like, okay, I look her both in the eye. I'm like, that won't work. Can I count on you to be on time the rest of the training? And they're like, yeah, you can. And I open the door, and I let them both in. And Bertha says to Vicky, that kid just reprimanded me. And Vicky goes, that kid is my son. I didn't even acknowledge that she was my mom. But that's, again, like, talking about, like, playing the role. I was playing the role. Like, my mom paid money to be in the training, so I wasn't about to give her mom treatment. I was about to give her the treatment that she paid for.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was my mom's, where was I going with this? I was going somewhere with it. Oh, I was my mom's group leader, and when it came to enroll her into advanced, and this is like a week and a half after my sister-in-law killed herself, and my mom is like, you know, like what do you want came up? Like, hey, what came up with what do you want? I want my family to be confident and happy. And she's like, well, I feel like I already, you know, am being that for my family. And I said, hey, mom, can I be real with you right now? And she's like, yeah. And I said, based on results, you have a 30-year-old son who's now a widower due to lack of confidence. So are you open to seeing that as a place that you can work on? That's your result as a mother. That's my result as a brother, is that we have both, you know, we have both attracted and developed a brother. I developed a brother who was underconfident and attracted someone with so many issues that he ended up becoming a widower because she killed herself. And my mom was like, tears came down her eyes. She's like, you are so right. That's something I've been avoiding. Thank you so much for telling me that. And it's like, I love you enough to tell you. Like, I can't just say, oh, yeah, you are doing great. Like, when I can clearly see, like, a place that really gets to be worked on.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's, like, my brother, where he took a stand for me, where, you know, for many years, you know, for me being military, for, you know, Rob being military, the emotional side of it, yes, they make us do this, like, resiliency training, but I feel like if I hadn't have gone through MITT, I probably wouldn't have been, like, right now, like, where I am in my emotional, like, everything. So when my brother took a stand for me and he called me up out of nowhere and he was just like, hey, you know, like, how are you doing? And I'm just, you know, like, when you just want to get rid of somebody and you're just like, yeah, I'm fine. And it's like, no, really, like, I'm asking you, how are you doing? And he took a stand for me and he wouldn't take no for an answer. And it takes that level of love to actually get someone to change and wake up and want to make that change in themselves. So,
yeah, just the conversations that you and I've had and the things that you've told me about that, like, entire experience and the way things were beforehand and then just, you know, seeing the way you are now afterwards. I mean, there's a huge, huge impact that did for you and completely, like, turned you around almost in the complete opposite direction, well on your way to being better. Like, it's extremely impressive. Like, after I started, like, being filled in and all these things and, like, I started kind of, like, paying more attention and learning particular things about you, like, I can definitely see it, and I'm, yeah.
You know what's crazy, though, is that, like, he's always like, oh, he's like, how are you this way? Like, how did I find someone like you? And it's like, honestly, if you would have met me, like, a few years ago, you wouldn't have gotten, like, the woman that you have right now. And it takes a lot of work, and not a lot of people are willing to do that work because they're still stuck in their victim stories. So just the fact that, like, you're able to go through and actually, you know, be able to identify, you know, the triggers, and, like, you actually talked to me about triggers, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but, like, being able to identify triggers and, like, actually working on them and being like, you know, what is this teaching me? And going the opposite way of, like, well, I'm going to be a victim to it. Nah, like, we're going to work on this and we're going to become a better person so that when you do meet somebody or when you do have, you know, a relationship, a friendship or whatever, you know, with someone, you're not bringing all of your baggage into that. So, but yeah, no. So, like, he actually taught me about triggers. So,
And everybody has.
So like one thing for sure was my mom. My mom, you know, being on her high pedestal of like not wanting anything for herself, because she was like, I just want my kids to be happy. I just want, you know, the best for them. And if we could all just live in the same house, that would be great. But other than that, I don't want anything for myself. And it's just like, oh, that triggered me so bad. And then you were just like, you know, what is this? What's coming up for you? And, you know, how can you make it to where it's like, what is this teaching me? Instead of you just being triggered. So, yeah, that made a lot more sense for me, where it was like, okay, how can I look at this?
Which, from everything that you just said to everything that you were just talking about now, so, like, some of the conversations that you and I have had personally about a lot of these things, the fact that you're able to, like, identify it, and as we were talking, you, like, brought that up, these particular things that you had learned how to figure out and identify to be able to, like, gain control of it, I've noticed, and I've seen a lot. So like, there's definitely a very significant amount of positive change that has happened because of all these things that you experienced.
And what's great is that most of these things are actually in his book. So, yes.
When I was talking about this the other day, like, if you read my Facebook feed from, like, the past 2 weeks, it's like I was rereading it, I'm like, this is a guy that's clearly in his shit, that's just not wanting to be in his shit and wanting to fight through it. But I've clearly been in my shit for like 3 weeks, but I'm like working through it in this journal post that I'm like, oh, I think people might have value from reading this, so I'm gonna post it. And it's just like all of this, like, I've been so triggered by all this stuff. But every time I'm triggered, I ask myself, who still has my power?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm triggered, that means that something still has my power. So I'm working to remove this trigger. Like, what I've learned through this whole like quarantine ordeal is I've given a lot of my power to external experiences. I've given my power to the ability to jump on an airplane. I've given my power to, going out and being social with people. Am I able, am I even capable of finding joy when I'm just by myself, locked in a house? Like, I posted an article called "I Still Don't Know Why the Cage Bird Sings," because I'm sitting here, I'm like,
that's a nice reference. That is a good reference right there.
I'm sitting here, I'm like, I still don't know why the cage bird sings. Like, I'm sitting here in my shit still, and I'm like not enjoying this, but like, I understand that there is joy, you know, like, there is work to be done right now. But I'm currently in the let's do some work process,
mm-hmm.
versus the I'm completely happy sitting here in my chair process.
Yeah. And that's like, we talked about that, I think, last
week. Last week, yeah.
Yeah, where it was like, you know, you don't necessarily have to be doing something to, you know, have that peace of mind. And being able to be still, you know, like, why do you need so many, like, outside things in order to be, you know, happy? And it's like, can you be comfortable with just being still? So, that's good. But,
that's really, like, that's what we're all collectively learning. Like, I wrote, did you read my letter that I wrote to 167, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago? In the WhatsApp chat, mm-hmm. like, I basically said in this letter, before coronavirus or anything was a thing, I pretty much said, hey, long story short, it's a really long letter, but bottom line said, I'd like to go home and spend time with my family. And 3 or 4 days later, we're on quarantine, and I have to go home and spend time with my family. But I feel like, even though this is what I said I wanted, it feels like I have to be doing this as opposed to I'm choosing to be doing this. Because, like, now I don't even have an option to go. But, like, if I were, like, I think, like, how my mind works, like, if I have the option to go back to California, it makes me believe that I'm choosing to be here with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it just feels like I'm kind of locked here with my parents and I don't want to be here, even though I do.
That explains the wallpaper, actually.
Yeah, actually, it really does. That was a good one. That was good.
Oh, my God.
But
that's a real flowers in the attic situation you got going on there.
I'm not even. Good for you.
But you're right. And like, you know what? All these people that are like, oh, I want to start my business. Oh, I want to write this book. Or I want to do XYZ. And it's like this whole entire situation is like forcing you basically to just sit still. And it's like you're going to see the people that are actually for real, that really want it and have the discipline to do it, because you have nothing but time. You've been asking for time, and right now you have it. So it's like, what are you going to do with this time? So it's great.
Yeah, I saw a post. It's like, if you don't have a new business, a new body, or a new skill by the end of this, it was never a conversation of time, but a conversation of commitment. Right? So I took in some feedback. I decided, hey, on Saturday, I'm going to have my book launch Saturday, April 4th. The new version will be out for people to read. I'm really excited about it.
All right. Where can they buy this book? Or where can they find it?
So you can find it on Amazon, Google search, Let's Start a Cult, Braxton Amundson, or Let's Start a Cult Book, and find it on Amazon. I think it's $12. It's not even expensive. It's $12, and I personally promise you it'll be the best read of your life.
I'm getting it.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. We definitely are going to look forward to buying your book.
Absolutely.
We are definitely going to support. I definitely want to read this like new ending. This wraps this up.
We're past our time limit. The street lights are coming on. We got to go home. We're going to get grounded.
All right, y'all. Believe in yourself. Trust yourself. Take responsibility. You have everything you need within you. Make sure to subscribe and follow us on Instagram. I am Anna Valencia, and
I am Rob Sepulveda.
And this is the Possibilitarian Podcast. I know you're coming right, I'm saying, I'm saying.